a warm welcome to the Global Village, where we explore the world one song at a time. Tonight, we're going to take a look at those amazing singers and musicians whose status in their homelands went beyond their role as entertainer. So much so that they were revered as if they embodied the soul of their nation. We'll hear an Egyptian singer who drove herself and her audiences into such a pitch of ecstasy that it was believed she inhaled opium during her concerts. We'll hear a Congolese legend whose death resulted in 4 days of national mourning. And we'll hear a Puerto Rican singer who's had a national holiday declared in his memory. But we begin with someone that everybody knows. There are so many legends around Edith Piaf's life, it's hard to know what's true. She definitely knew poverty and tragedy, that much is certain. Her mother more or less abandoned her soon after she was born, and she was raised in a brothel in Normandy by her grandmother, who was the madame of the establishment. It's also true that she entertained high-ranking Nazi officers during the war at the infamous 122 Club in Paris. But many entertainers did. They didn't have much choice if they wanted to stay alive. And it said, as a reward, Piaf was allowed to pose for photographs with French prisoners of war, by the way, to boost their morale, and that the Frenchmen then cut out these photos and were able to use them to make forged passport photos. She was star-crossed in love too. One famous lover, the already married world champion boxer Marcel Cerdan, died in a plane crash on his way from Paris to meet her. Her last words were, "Every damn fool thing you do in this life, you pay for." And I reckon it's that kind of honesty, which she also brought to her music, that was a large part of her appeal. That ability to take a straight look at life, maybe at herself too, and even if what she saw wasn't always pretty, she accepted it, and she expressed what she saw in a cry from the heart. Which is the opposite, really, of the title of the song that opened the show, her signature tune, La Vie en Rose, which loosely translates as looking at life through rose-coloured spectacles. On October the 5th, 2008, the birthday of Ismael Rivera was declared a national holiday in Puerto Rico. But he's not really well known outside of Puerto Rico, even though he was a major architect of the sound that would eventually be termed salsa. The thing is that Cuba has become so identified with salsa that people could be forgiven for thinking it's exclusively a Cuban style. Not true. Puerto Rico was just as important. Actually, salsa was developed primarily in New York by Cuban and most especially by Puerto Rican immigrants in the 60s and 70s. And it was the earlier singing style of Ismael Rivera, based on old Puerto Rican folk rhythms like bomba and plena, that provided one of the cornerstones for the genre. Just one of the things he contributed was the way he would play with a word, stressing and firing out each separate syllable like beats on a drum, like kukala, kukala, so that the words themselves became part of the percussion. Here, look. Kukala, kukala, kuka, kukala, que ya sale. Kukala, kukala, kuka, kukala, que ya baila. Kukala, 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 que ya sale. Kukala, kukala, kuka, kukala, que se hace. See what I mean? He's nearly as good as me. And that sound provided the template for later salsa stars like Celia Cruz. The reggaeton rapper Tego Calderon said, "In my house, Ismael Rivera was what Elvis Presley was to the gringos." El Bombón de Elena by Cortijo y su Combo, featuring the mighty Ismael Rivera on vocals. We'll be back in a jiff with the undisputed queen of Egyptian song. I'm going to start at the end. When Umm Kulthum died in 1975, 3 million people, 3 million, lined the streets of Cairo and followed her cortege. They called her the Star of the East, and during her radio concerts, which were broadcast live on the first Thursday of each month, the country more or less came to a halt. The streets of the towns were as quiet as Tralee on the day of a Kerry-Dublin All-Ireland final. People rushed home to hear the concert, and out in the countryside and the small villages where there wasn't electricity, anyone with a battery-operated radio suddenly had a house crammed with the neighbours, invited or not. We're listening to one of those radio performances now. The nearest equivalent in Western music to this song tradition is probably opera. The songs are epic in scale. They're measured in hours, not minutes. And they tell a story, usually a love story. And a song has different stages that take us through the evolving stages of the story. And again, like opera, the singer is accompanied by an orchestra which begins with an overture, creating a mood and a setting for the singer. And I suppose also introducing us, the listener, to the magic carpet on which we are about to fly. That applause tells us that Umm Kulthum has walked out onto the stage. And in this story, El Hubkolo, it means all the love. She begins by expressing the longing, the desire of the lover. Lovers are together, and the audience is momentarily silenced, as if they've suddenly found themselves peeking through the bedroom window. It's strong poetry. What she's saying is, "Oh, darling, oh, aroma of desire, my destiny from my nights of desire. What is the scent of this perfume of your hands, from the spring in your lips, from the nights in your eyes. She finishes on a note of doubt. She's afraid. She says, "My fear is that this great happiness will be taken from me." And so we're brought back to earth before the curtain draws. As the nation moved towards independence in the early part of the last century, and even after independence, with the inevitable self-doubts that accompany the march to freedom, Count John McCormack offered a living example of an Irishman on the world stage who was at the very least an equal to his peers, and for many, inside and outside Ireland, he was above and beyond them all.
I'll walk beside you through the world tonight.
And unlike other world-renowned Irish artists of the period, like Yeats or Joyce, he had popular mass appeal. He had the common touch, despite that title of Count that was bestowed on him by the Pope. McCormack is justly famous for his early operatic recordings, so much so that his recordings of ballads and Irish airs are sometimes considered second division in comparison. But I have to say, I love them. He sounds entirely at home on them. And these are the songs that were embraced in the cottages of Kerry and Connemara, every bit as much as the concert halls of Paris and New York. He had a warmth to his voice that he brings to the songs of Thomas Moore and Stephen Foster, and I've a special reason for choosing the one I'm about to play. My father had two songs that he'd sing. Well, sing isn't perhaps the right term, but we didn't mind. One was "If I Were a Blackbird, I'd Whickle and Sing," and the other was "I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair." He used to sing both while cooking us breakfast on a Sunday morning, and every time I hear this, I can see him out in the scullery, leaning over the oven, with a towel wrapped around his waist by way of an apron, as he flicks over the eggs in the pan. He had an intimate quality, didn't he? Almost as if he's pouring out his heart to you one to one. That was Count John McCormack with "I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair." There's a Spanish word used to describe a particular quality in flamenco, duende. Maybe soul is our nearest equivalent, but it's something more than that. It's like a taste of tragedy, a streak of dark blood running through the music. A philosopher might call it existential grit. And it also refers to that gift some musicians have of being able to lift an audience outside of themselves, where the musician and the audience are joined in a kind of spiritual communion. That's why flamenco is really an art that's best experienced live. Where you're nearly hit by the sweat flying off the dancer's forehead, and where you feel the vibrations in the pounded floorboards travelling up through your body. Over the last century, the role of the guitar changed in flamenco. Originally, it was simply an instrument to accompany singers and dancers, but gradually its status rose to a place where it could be the focus of attention itself, as a solo instrument. Paco de Lucia didn't instigate the change. That happened much earlier, in the 20s and 30s, with players like Ramon Montoya. But Paco de Lucia was its crowning glory. His mix of technique and passion took flamenco guitar to new heights. He was always pushing, always exploring, and even though his style was absolutely rooted in the flamenco tradition, he wasn't afraid to incorporate other elements, jazz, bossa nova, even rock, as he spearheaded a style in the 70s and 80s that came to be known as Nuevo Flamenco, New Flamenco. Stunning Paco de Lucia with Alma Raima. We'll be back after the break with the biggest star in Africa ever. This is beginning to sound like a competition for who had the biggest funeral. And I only mention it to show how revered these artists were in their homelands. When Francois Luambo Makiadi, known to all Africa simply as Franco, died in 1989, the president of Zaire called for 4 days of national mourning. And the radio stations played nothing but Franco's music non-stop. He was absolutely huge. And not just in the Congo, but pretty much all over Africa. Franco didn't invent Congolese rumba, no more than the Beatles invented rock and roll. But the style of rumba he crystallized hit a nerve in Africa the way the Beatles did in Europe and America. It changed everything. There's a before and after Franco in African popular music. Rumba was the new sound that appealed to the millions migrating from country villages to cities like Leopoldville in the 1950s. It was a time of new opportunity and optimism, with independence on the way. And Franco's music captured the mood of the times. Plus, he introduced new subject matter to the songs. He didn't stick to the simple topic of boy meets girl. He talked about the everyday struggles that everyone could relate to. And he brought humour too. In the song we're listening to, which is about a club he used to play in, he says, "You go in okay and you come out KO'd."